Hi, this is Alan Chartok, and I'm delighted to be in conversation with two great people, Judy and Howard Levin. They are the parents of Rachel Levin Truxell, who founded Lymphedivas in 2006. The company produces and sells medically correct fashion for lymphedema and is now based in Pittsfield, Massachusetts. Judy Levin earned a bachelor's degree in education from Boston University, a master's degree in social work from Simmons College. During her professional career as a clinical social worker, Judy has worked in such diverse settings as hospitals, schools, child guidance clinics, family service agencies, and community mental health centers. Volunteer work has included participating as a team member since 2000 in a long-term intergenerational Holocaust research project, Transcending Trauma, Survival, Resilience, and Clinical Implications in Survivor Families. Working in an after-school program in Philadelphia Public Schools, teaching knitting to the blind at the Associated Services for the Blind in Philadelphia, and other volunteer projects sponsored by synagogues. In addition, she and Howard also volunteer at Tanglewood in the lunch program for TMC students. And that's the Tanglewood Medical, the Tanglewood Music Center. Howard Levin graduated from Columbia College with a BA in history and then received his MD degree from New York University School of Medicine in 1966. He is a retired physician with a specialty in internal medicine and rheumatology. Training included internship and residency at Beth Israel Hospital in Boston and Royal Canadian Red Cross Memorial Hospital in England and immunology research at Beth Israel, Harvard. A Fulbright Fellowship at the Weizmann Institute in Israel and research at the Immunology Branch of the National Cancer Institute in Bethesda, Maryland. He spent 14 years in practicing rheumatology and internal medicine in San Jose, California, becoming medical director of the 72-physician group. In 1988, he joined the HMO U.S. Healthcare as medical director in charge of quality and utilization. After 6 years, he joined Milliman USA as an equity principal. In that role, he served as a consultant to hospitals, pharmaceutical companies, and other medically related institutions with a particular emphasis in risk management. Welcome, Judy and Howard Levin.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
Now we know who you are, and so you've got quite a story. Let's start with you, Judy. How did it all come about?
Well, in 2005, Rachel was diagnosed with breast cancer.
This is your daughter.
This is our daughter. And she was 34 years old at the time. She had just had a lump, and it was excised, and the doctor insisted that 99.9% she would be fine. Sadly, that was not correct. She had a very aggressive form of breast cancer called triple negative. And not only triple negative, which is difficult to treat, but she was stage 3, which means it had already metastasized or spread. And in spite of wonderful treatment at the University of Pennsylvania, in 3 years, she died. During that time, right after her treatment was started, she developed lymphedema, which is a quite common, Howard will talk more about that, I think, medically, but it's a very common side effect of the treatment for breast cancer and the radiation. She was given a sleeve to wear, which is called a compression sleeve, which is really the only treatment there is for lymphedema. I think Howard should actually talk about the
medical piece
of that.
All right, we'll switch to Howard.
Yeah.
Howard.
Okay, so this was a side effect mainly as a result of a perturbation of the lymph system.
You use the word perturbation.
A dissection of the axillary or the lymph nodes in the area under the arm or radiation to that area causes a limitation of lymph flow across that area. And as a result, any woman who has had those kinds of treatment are at risk for lymphedema or develop lymphedema. And
Okay, let me stop you right there. So what causes the lymphedema again?
Well, the lymph circulation is the third circulation of the body. The first two are arterial and venous. This is an entirely separate circulation.
Okay, here's a stupid question. What's lymph?
Lymph is fluid that is formed in the transfer of fluid from the arterial circulation to the venous circulation. There's some fluid left behind. It's in between the cells. It contains protein and fluid and some cells. And as a result, the lymph circulation scavenges up this remaining amount of fluid and brings it through the lymph circulation, passing through lymph nodes, which is part of the lymph circulation.
Which is why the doctors always feel under your arm to make sure you don't have lymph nodes that have been
enlarged or something like that. Yeah, that's part of the lymph circulation. And when you alter that circulation by radiation or by some kind of surgical procedure, the lymph drainage does not go as planned, and it can get backed up. And that backup is called lymphedema. It's swelling of a limb, in the case of most breast cancer patients, arm. And there is anywhere from 10% to as much as 60% chance of getting lymphedema or that kind of swelling. That can occur at any time from the first days after the treatment to 25 years later.
Okay, let me stop you there and ask you what the consequences of lymphedema are.
Well, it's a question of how far it progresses. What we are trying to prevent, if we can, and the research is not complete in this, is end-stage lymphedema, which is a swelling which is permanent and painful. This is a relatively small percentage of patients who are at risk for lymphedema or have lymphedema.
But can it cause death?
It can't cause death. One of the side effects is an increased susceptibility to infection. Infection in this situation puts people at risk, but a significant side effect is not death. It's mainly discomfort and the fact that it's ugly. It's disfiguring.
Yes. Okay. Judy.
I think one of the difficulties about being diagnosed with lymphedema is that, you know, you think you've gotten through the cancer part and that was bad enough, but nobody can see it. Lymphedema, you have a quite swollen arm and it's quite noticeable to everybody. And I know that Rachel certainly, and I know that we've heard this from customers of ours as well, the chronicity of it and the discomfort of it is lifelong. Once you get it, it doesn't go away. You can treat it with compression sleeves and make it a little better, but you are always thinking about it. You have to be careful when you're cooking. You can't use a knife. You can't cut yourself. You can't get bitten by a mosquito or a spider or a bee.
Why not?
Well, anything, these recommendations are part of the recommendations of the National Lymphedema Network. Anything which would increase lymph flow is potentially troublesome because we know that the lymph circulation in that area is compromised. So anything that increases the lymph flow will push against that compromise. And so things like an infection caused by an insect bite or inflammation caused by an insect bite increases capillary flow, and capillary flow will increase lymph flow because we said it scrounges up what's left after capillary flow. So generally the indications is to prevent those things which will increase the ultimately increase the lymph flow.
What about cellulitis? Is that a problem?
Yeah. The cellulitis, which is an infection of the skin, is more frequent in people with lymphedema. Again, we talked about infection, and then that could start a cycle of increased problems with the arm.
I don't know where to go in this interview right now because we now have this background. But let's talk a little bit about the trauma of Rachel passing. I can't even imagine it myself. I have two children. I can't even imagine what that is like. How did it affect you guys?
Well, first of all, I have to say that Rachel was a very healthy, athletic, really took care of herself. You know, she didn't smoke. She didn't drink. She was a triathlete. She was a vegetarian. You know, she did, quote, all the right things. We have no breast cancer in our family that we know of. Out of the blue. Totally out of the blue, this came.
Had she been tested for the BRAD?
No, she was too young for anything. She was too young for a mammogram. She found the lump herself. She went to the doctor, and they said, you know, we'll do this lumpectomy, and that's when it all started. So it was, it's just devastating. I can't.
We did a lot of crying together.
Yeah, we did. But the other thing is that, you know, I had worked on this Holocaust project for now it's 15 years, Holocaust survivors, and they were really role models for me. And I figured if they could deal with what they dealt with, I could deal with this. And we really were very hopeful at the beginning because Rachel was so healthy and really did know how to take care of herself. You just put one foot in front of the other. I think that's, you just do what you have to do, and you get a lot of help.
What was Rachel doing for a living?
She had a company called Story Disc. She created documentaries for families, for museums, for historic buildings in the Philadelphia area. And she did that for about 5 years before that. She was an English teacher at private schools in the Philadelphia area, and then a graphic designer at the art museum.
So Rachel dies. She passes. Mm-hmm. Papa, we heard from Judy on this. What was your ability to roll with this?
It was awful. I got help. We were on medication. It is about the worst thing one can imagine.
Now, you're a physician. You've seen people come and go.
Yeah.
But it's different.
But it's different when it's your child. It's different when it's a parent. Having a child die is unnatural. And so pretty much half or more of our time was devoted to helping her in one way or another and always be available. She did, when she was given the diagnosis of lymphedema, she was given this beige elastic bandage to put on her arm, and she was devastated because anybody that saw her said, oh, what's the matter with your arm, which triggered the whole story, and she didn't want to tell the whole story at that time. So her physicians suggested, well, why don't you make one yourself? And so she did, and she got a couple of partners originally, and she started the business. She went out and found a consultant at what was a DuPont, which is not far from Philadelphia, and they had a division that developed new products using their fibers, and so she got this going. She won a prize at Drexel with one of her partners, a business plan contest, and her partner was in the fashion school, and it was the first time the fashion school had ever scored on a business plan contest, but she won, and they got 6 months in a incubator and training and some money, and they got the thing going. During 2007, they sold products.
Okay, let's stop you right there, Howard, and ask what the thing was in this case. So in other words, she has now developed a product, which is a sleeve, mm-hmm. goes on your arm. But what the real contribution here was that she made it fashionably accessible.
Yes, they were beautiful. And they came in colors initially, and you could put it on your arm, and no one would really think it was medical.
I think one of the, first of all, Rachel was very entrepreneurial and very creative. Both sides of her were like that. And having been a triathlete, she said, why can't they make this sleeve out of the same materials that the high-performance athletes use? They all use garments that have breathability and wickability. And this sleeve that she was given absolutely did not have that. It was hot. You sweat underneath it. It was awful.
What's wickability?
That is that it takes moisture away from the skin through the fabric and presents it to the outside air where it can evaporate and cool.
Okay, great. Back to you, Judy.
So she found, this was 2007, 2006. You know, the internet was not what it is today, but she was a big noodler around her, and she found a company in which is an offshoot of DuPont, which Howard said. And they had a fabric technician, a knitting technician who was willing to work with her to develop the sleeve according to her specifications, which meant that it had to have this breathability, it had to have wicking capabilities, it had to be. So this was brand new. Nobody had ever done this before. No one had ever thought of it before. You know, our competitors, the big companies, Rachel used to say, you know, it's run by men who've been designing the same thing for 70 years, and they don't really care. They never wear it. And her real goal was that women should have options. They shouldn't just be given one sleeve. As she said, it didn't even come in black. I mean, it just was beige.
So what was the name of the company that she chose?
Lymphedivas. It was always called Lymphedivas.
Lymphedivas.
Yes.
Okay. Now, let me proceed, obviously, just so that everybody gets a sense of what's going on here. Does she know she's in trouble while she's doing all of this?
Yes. She absolutely knew it. And I'm glad you brought that up, because that is something I did want to bring up. She was incredibly brave. She never once said, why me? She never once cried. I mean, she cried, but she didn't say, you know, I can't do this. She treated it like a race. You know, you could see her focusing, concentrating when we would go for treatment. It was a race that she was going to have to win, and she was going to do everything that she could to win it.
Was she married?
She got married in between. She had just met Jason, who was her husband, right before she met him in January. She was diagnosed in
March.
He stuck with her. After her treatment, they got married. She was in remission for a year and a half, something like that, and they did get married.
And when she was in remission, did she think she had beaten it?
Yes. Yes. She felt that she had beaten it. And she also wrote a blog. At the beginning, you know, blogs were not so popular then as they are now.
There was a billion of them then.
Right. And it was, she was a very good writer. She was an English major in college, and you know, she really loved writing.
And where'd she go to college?
She went to University of Chicago for 2 years, and then she transferred to Berkeley.
Mm-hmm.
So she wrote this blog. And she had a wonderful sense of humor. And she just informed all of her friends about what was going on, but in a very literary, humorous, informational way. It's an unusual blog.
It's still being read.
Yeah, it's on our website.
Did you guys ever think of putting it together in a book of some kind?
No. People have asked me that, and I haven't. Mm-hmm. I think at this point, a lot of blogs out there are like that now, and it's not so unusual. But I just haven't.
Okay. So she comes up with this idea. She goes to the DuPont people. You used the word before. I want to make sure I get it. And that is knit for the people who are listening to this. This is a big part of it, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, the sleeves and practically all medical compression are knit products. Ours is knit on a medical circular knitting machine, which is a knitting machine that knits around in a circle so that there are no seams.
You're getting ahead of yourself, Howard, here, mm-hmm. because you said ours. And I'm sure everybody caught that.
Okay.
Because one of the tributes to your daughter was that you kept this thing going, right? How did that happen? How did that come about?
Well, it happened in November.
And you have a wonderful son, and he played a part in this,
yes.
too.
Not then, not at the beginning.
At the beginning in November of 2007, she was declining rapidly, and it was clear that there were no other chemo left for that would be effective.
I'm sorry, and, let me stop. When did you know that the grace period had ended?
Probably around April of 2007. That was 3 months into where she was selling the products.
Do you remember the phone call?
I remember the blog. It had a title, It's Back.
Yeah,
oh,
but
boy.
But she started having pain in her chest at the same time.
Elizabeth Edwards.
Had, and at the same time, we were having a Seder, and she started complaining of pain. And this was in the news, and she knew that it was a problem, and it was. So that's when we found out, and she continued to be very active in the business throughout that time.
Now, this is her business. She had business partners that she had brought into
right.
it. She got the people involved in the technical stuff,
mm-hmm.
and she started this company. So tell us something about the formation of the company.
Well, as I said, that she was very upset when she was given the sleeve. She went to get the sleeve in the basement at a durable medical equipment company. It was dingy, and amongst the bedpans and the walkers, this 34-year-old young lady received her prescribed beige bandage for her arm. And she cried. And that's when she went to her doctor and complained that she didn't really want to wear anything like that. It was hot, heavy, it was ugly. It was irritating, and so the doctor says, make your own. And that's how that started. Her partners and her came up with the name of Lymphedivas. That's L-Y-M as in mother, P-H-E, D as in David, I, V as in Victor, A, S as in Sam, Lymphedivas online. And they went to this part of DuPont that developed the product for them according to her specifications. And it took about 6 months, and then in beginning of 2007, they started selling.
So when they won the Drexel Business Plan Award, what you won is a time in the incubator. They had an incubator, a business incubator there, with all kinds of mini business courses. And so they had a little office. That was their first office, was at Drexel University, and with all kinds of mentoring. And that's really how the business began to get off the ground.
And who'd they get the mentoring from?
Different professors at the business school at Drexel.
And they took an interest in this because?
Well, they submitted this as a business plan contest submission, and they came in third in this, which allowed them to win prize money and this incubator, 6 months of the incubator.
If it took off, does Drexel get any part of that?
No.
Okay.
Do your parking meters out here, do you have parking cards here, smart cards?
Yes.
That was a Drexel business plan winner.
Interesting. Yeah,
yes.
That's wonderful.
Okay. The Biata Center, it's
okay,
called.
So there they are. And
in a little cubby. I mean, you know, it's half the size of this room.
And who are the partners?
She had another person who was a survivor. That was Robin Miller. And Robin
very young. Robin was 27 or 28.
And when she was diagnosed. And a friend of hers who was about ready to graduate from the Drexel Fashion and Design School.
Kristen Dudley.
Okay, so they come up with this idea. How artistic did they have to be? Because I see before me, and nobody can see it here, but you can see it online, all of the sleeves. And I see one right here, which is made for Hanukkah, and others which are made for the holiday season, and others which are made, you know, for fashion statement. A beautiful black one with sort of a diamond pattern running down it. Who came up with all of that?
Well, we have a couple of designers that work with us now. Originally, we bought the designs, but then we developed...
What do you mean you bought them?
The process which we use to imprint the designs on the blank sleeves is called dye sublimation. It's similar to some of the same processes that are used for T-shirts. T-shirts use other kinds too, but it's one of the methods that T-shirts are imprinted with designs. And originally we bought the paper, which is used in dye sublimation, printed with special inks that, when they're heated, turn into gas and go into the fibers.
Is this proprietary information?
No.
Okay.
And so we use that process, and originally we bought the designs, and then bit by bit, our designers started doing their own. And now all our designs are by our designers. One of our designers came with us from Philadelphia and is now living in the Berkshires.
Now, you have, again, gotten ahead of yourselves, because now I'm hearing words like, we. This is her business. How did you guys get into it?
Well, during that last part of 2007, when she was declining, she brought me into her bedroom and she said, this business is the most important thing that I've done in my life.
What'd she call you? Did she call you dad or pops?
Your dad.
Or
your dad? Yeah. And could I take it over and continue it? And I knew what that would mean, but I could never deny her anything at any time in her life. And so I agreed, and I said it was a business, and I couldn't guarantee that it would actually survive or grow, but I would do my best. And she said that's all that she wanted. And about 6 weeks later, she was dead. So this business essentially became her child and my grandchild, my first one, and possibly my only, as far as I knew. So it was a very important thing. It's what brings me onto this station. I will do anything to further this business.
So you took over this, and Judy, you got involved in it too?
Well, I just wanted to say something about Howard's background and how he was the perfect person to take over the business at this time. He has such a varied background within medicine that he used, I think, every single one of his skills, his science skills, his medical skills, his entrepreneurial skills, his marketing skills. He's been very involved to make sure that the sleeve is what we say it is medically. He has developed all sorts of systems to test and check to make sure that we are producing what we say we're producing.
Howard, I want to ask you this. Mm-hmm. What Judy just said almost implies that you made improvements to what your daughter had done. Did you?
Well, what was important to me was that our competitors were saying that these sleeves are so beautiful and so lightweight and wonderful that they really don't work. Mm-hmm. And they would sort of pass that around. And so I felt that it was really necessary for us to emphasize the clinical effectiveness of our products.
Did you make the product better?
Yes. We improved on the way it was constructed. We went on to develop additional products. We improved the method of quality control, that when we would get products from the people in North Carolina who knit our products, we would test them. We would test them again after we had finished decorating them, because we wanted to make sure we had done nothing to hurt the medical effectiveness when they finished the decoration that we gave. So all of that development work, quality control work, was what I tried to do. Most recently, I've developed a new method of fitting the garments. Right now, the way garments are fit off the shelf is that they give you a range of pressures at the wrist, class one being 20 to 30 millimeters of mercury pressure at the wrist. They give you no information anywhere else. Mm-hmm. The pressures of a sleeve are related to how big the arm is. With the bigger the arm, you increase the pressure. The stretch gets tighter. And what we have done with this new fitting method is that we have committed to showing people, and the therapists in particular, what the pressures are at three points along the sleeve, not just an average one size fits all, but we will tell the pressures for the whole range of circumferences of the sleeve, the mid-lower arm, and the mid-upper arm, and so that they will know when they fit someone and they measure the arm what the pressure is at those three levels and whether they are getting a true graduated compression. No other company goes to that extent and that extreme to prove that that product is going to be good for an individual.
Judy, how have your social work skills come to all of this?
Not. There really wasn't. When after Rachel died, the business was actually then had moved to their home. She and Jason had bought a house in Philadelphia. So the business was centered there. And I just did packing, shipping, not much. The telephone calls, we had an office manager who took care of the sales calls. So that's really all I've contributed to the business over the years.
I think, frankly, you've contributed a lot more to it.
Well, thank you.
Listening to it. But let me ask whether or not you guys had to put money into this.
Yes. A fair amount, particularly since I had retired.
Is this your retirement money?
This was our retirement money that went into the business. And we reached a point. Well, you know, people who have owned businesses know it's really painful. Every month you have to make payroll, and
we know some about that.
If there's not enough, do you have to make it enough? And that was fairly painful. During that time, the first partner had been bought out prior to Rachel dying, and I bought out the second partner because literally we couldn't afford her. And so around 2009, we just started to turn a profit. We actually could pay the people based on sales. That was true relief, and we've never, since that time, we've never had to dip in any more into my, Judy and my retirement funds, and it's still growing. We still put pretty much everything that we get out of the business back into the business, and so we've grown considerably since originally.
Well, let's hear about the success.
Well, I think there's two levels of success. One is
what you promised your daughter.
One is what I promised my daughter. And when we get letters, and we do get letters continually from our customers thanking us for having changed their lives and allowed them to go out in public with their sleeve, that's a success.
But if somebody sees a sleeve, don't they say, well, that's a cancer survivor?
They don't associate.
I mean, who walks around with sleeves, even beautifully decorated sleeves?
No. Well, for example, one of the sleeves that we have is a tattoo design. And most people can't understand. Who's your tattoo artist? Where'd you get those tats? That's not an uncommon reaction unless you're right on top of the arm for what people say. So you can camouflage the disease
but
to an extent.
But I also, it enables women to respond back in a way that's positive rather than, oh, you know, I have lymphedema. So some people say, you know, it's a trapeze accident. You know, I mean, it really encourages some humor from them. And that's another nice part of this. So
the other part is just sheer numbers. We'll sell maybe 34,000 items worldwide. We have a big following in Australia, in UK, Canada. We have a distributor in Japan.
Now, you know what's going to happen. Somebody's going to walk up to you guys, some big business. They're going to say, we'll buy it out. Does that interfere with the promise made to your daughter?
Depends on what they say and who it is. I think we'd be reluctant to. My son did take over the business.
Let's talk about your son. Yeah. What's his name?
Josh.
Josh. And Josh got into the business.
Josh got into the business. He had been working in New York as a project manager for a company called Frog Design, which is an internationally known design firm.
So this is sort of right up his alley.
Yeah, he could move in. And so I was looking for an exit strategy, and that was about the only exit strategy I could come up with. And originally he had come up to me in 2008 that he really wanted to join it. And that's when I was putting in money. And I said, no, I've already done that with you. We're not going to do that again. Give him money every month.
Oh, yeah.
But a year later, he was interested and we could actually afford him. And he joined. And as soon as he said he was joining and that was done, he says, oh, by the way, I've always wanted to live in the Berkshires. We had a home up here. But I never knew what I was going to do. And now I know what I'm going to do. I'm going to move the company to the Berkshires, which he did.
By that time, he was in a position to make the decision as to where the company was going to be.
He was the CEO.
Yeah.
And we loved the Berkshires, too. But he was the one that if he wanted to live in the Berkshires, and we had no other real objection because he was running the company, it was going to the Berkshires. And then he did get married, and he had two lovely little children. So we said, well, let's say our grandchildren are here, the business is here, our son and daughter-in-law is here. Why are we in Philadelphia? So we sold the place in Philadelphia last year and moved to the Berkshires.
But did you already have a house in the Berkshires?
We had a house since 2000, vacations.
And you guys love music, classical music, and this is a sort of a perfect place for you to be, Judy.
Absolutely. I just wanted to go back to one thing. When Rachel was working with the company in Delaware, they knitted the sleeves for us originally at a very high cost per sleeve. And that went on for a year and a half. And after Rachel died and Howard took over, he said, we have got to find somebody to knit this other than this company because it was, business-wise, it was a very, very bad decision. So he went down to North Carolina, which at that time was the only place in the country, really, where they were still knitting things. And found one company that was willing to work with us because we were so small. You know, nobody was interested in this. And it was so cutting edge. And this guy actually had met Rachel, and he really liked her and what she had done and wanted to help out. So he, it's called Carillon, and they knit the, and Rachel had a requirement that we would not go overseas. It had to be made in
America. Why did she feel so strongly about that?
She felt that the quality control, we would lose it if it went overseas, and she wanted to maintain the quality of the garments.
So Howard, with your fabulous medical background, do you agree with her that if it went overseas, quality control would be limited?
Yeah, I think to a certain extent, yes. I think we also wanted to stay in America because at that time we were going through pretty rocky financial times.
The country was.
The country was. So, yeah, I thought that was. But I think that trying to deal with people with this kind of a product where you had to do a lot of interaction, 12 hours out of phase, it would have been horrendously difficult. And initially, we were only selling maybe 1,000 sleeves a year.
How many are you selling now?
About 35,000. And
what's the average price of a sleeve?
Well, the retail price is 90, and then we have a wholesale price for secondary seller stores and internet stores and things like that.
You keep using the word we.
Yep.
Your son is the CEO. You've handed it off to him, but you guys both use the word we. What's that all about?
Well, it's our company, too. I think
it's our baby.
It's Rachel, and we feel very connected to her. I mean, Howard has always talked about going into the office. He feels Rachel is there with him in the room, and it's hard to let go of that. So I think that is why we say we.
So what role do you play?
Oh, well, right now, I am not involved in ongoing operations. I gave that up about 6 months after Josh came aboard. But I do two things. The first is develop a new product, and we are developing a compression glove, which is a seamless compression glove. Its reason it's seamless is because we have to print on it, and we can't print on a glove that's seamed.
And also, it's very painful for women who have lymphedema in their hands. The seams in a glove are really painful.
So what will happen? You'll start to market this glove, which will also be designed?
Yeah, it will have matching designs to match the sleeve. So they'll be similar to the sleeve in terms of their design. The real issue has been to develop the actual product because it uses a machine. There are only two seamless glove machines on the market, one Japanese and one German. We chose to use the Japanese machine, and we couldn't find anybody to operate it, so we chose to bring it in-house. And we had one of our staff people volunteer to learn how to operate it.
How did your staff person learn?
Well, it's been a delightful thing. She
was sent her to Japan?
No, she was there. They have an office in New Jersey. She's been to North Carolina, where we had a company work developing some of the samples. That ended, and so we brought the machine here. We brought the design capacity here, and then we've had a technician come up from New Jersey and spend a week training her. She's an unusual young lady. She's a graduate from University of Michigan as a mechanical engineer. She had been a salesman at our office, mainly because she felt that it was doing something that was important. This is a very important thing to her. But she was getting tired of being a salesman, so she was approached whether she would like this. And it turns out to be a hand knitter. She's a programmer. All the skill sets that would be useful for someone in operating one of these very sophisticated computer-driven knitting machines. And so she's now rapidly producing a lot of prototypes for the glove. And hopefully, the beginning of next year, we'll start selling these compression gloves.
We're talking to Judy and Howard Levin. Judy, you wanted to bring something up?
Yes. I feel that this was such a miracle that this young woman would happen to be in our office. You know, when you move from a major urban city.
Do you really mean that a miracle? Or do you really mean a miracle or just, you know, lip service miracle? You know what I mean?
Yes. Well, what I really mean is I think Rachel was watching over us.
Uh-huh.
So I don't know how you want a spiritual miracle. There was something happening that she just happened to be in our office for the past year and a half. And everyone forgot that she had this background because she was our salesperson. And, you know, she kind of raises her hand and she says, you know, did you remember that I'm really a mechanical engineer?
So I'm going to ask you guys something. You have this new project, this glove. Why? Just to sell it or because you began to hear from people who said, we need this?
We began to hear from lots of people that said, we need this. And we heard from women who are using our gauntlet, which is the other thing we make for the hand, which doesn't have fingers, who really should be wearing
a
glove.
I'm sorry, what's
a gauntlet? Which is like a
fingers.
Glove, but only has a thumb and does not have the fingers.
I see.
Gauntlet.
But in the old movies, on the old movie channel, people mm-hmm. put these long white things on, you know, that go all the way up to. So why can't you have that just extended to the fingers?
Well, Rachel called these the onesies, and they do manufacture these. She had one, and she said that means that every time I had to go to the bathroom, I had to take the whole thing off. And these things are not easy to take off and put back on. And she said she will never make a onesie because they're too much trouble.
Do men ever need this product?
Oh, yeah. We do have products that were designed for men. They also have lymph node problems, can develop lymph node problems.
Men get breast cancer.
With breast cancer or lymphoma, other kinds of
the reason
problems.
I mention that is because when men go to the bathroom, they don't have to take it off.
Well, they should be washing their hands afterwards, though.
But we do have male designs. We have...
It's called Lymphadudes.
We just started Lymphadudes, and we have a set of male-oriented designs so that they can get our products without lace and that sort of stuff.
Wow. So to give our listeners an idea of how successful this is, how successful is it?
In what terms?
Money.
In money? Well, we're last year we passed $1 million in sales.
Uh-huh.
And so we've been growing anywhere from 15% to 30% a year.
So you're able to keep it going. You say that you're not taking anything out, right? Is that what you said?
Yeah, we haven't taken any real, out. Other than Josh has a salary, but I haven't.
Oh, we also have now 12 employees.
Uh-huh. In the Berkshires.
In the Berkshires.
And where is it manufactured?
It's manufactured at 7 North Street, which is corner in Pittsfield. Corner of northwest,
east and south,
north, south, east, and west.
So are you getting the appropriate notice? Because jobs are huge. And anybody who can bring 11 or 12 employees to Pittsfield has got to have some heroic status.
Well, we did win this summer. There was a Berkshire, one Berkshire or Berkshire one. We won, there was a...
Innovation... award.
We won the Innovation and Creative Award.
But we have gotten recognition and we've gotten support. We have translated our website into Portuguese and Spanish with the help of the Massachusetts Export Office.
Huh. And we won a stipend for that.
Yeah. And how do you know that the Chinese won't come along and just rip you off?
They've tried.
What do you mean they've tried?
Well, the issue... I mean, my daughter had this interesting story about Rachel that about 8 or 9 months after coming out with her products in colors, initially not in prints, one of the large multinational, multi-billion dollar companies came out with colors. And her partner then came in tears saying, they're going to put us out of business. And Rachel smiled and said, I did this to give women options. If we end up not the people that give them options, that's okay too.
But they didn't end up putting you out.
Yeah, they did continue their colors, and we used to have colors too, but then we started doing the prints. And prints turn out to be a little bit more complex and a little bit more individualized than big companies do because it's not a mass manufactured item. We have 100 different styles now that we offer. Would be
100?
100 different styles.
Wow.
And that would play havoc with distribution systems for the large compression companies. So they never followed us into that. And yeah, but we're in business. Somebody might come along and do that.
But that is such an interesting concept for all of us who do innovative work. There's always somebody nipping at your heels who wants to grab what you've done. We certainly have it here at Public Radio. And then, you know, what do you say? I mean, what can you possibly say? The newspaper calls me up and says, this other radio station is coming into your area, you know. And my answer is always, as Chairman Mao said, let 1,000 flowers bloom. Yep. And what else can you say? Yep. You can't say, that's not fair. We don't like them.
Yeah. Yep. But we have Rachel imbues the company with her philosophy. And that's one of them. We help people. And service is one of the things that distinguishes us. We've spent an hour on the phone with someone who we knew was never going to buy our product. We get...
Fill that in for me. You spend an hour on the phone with
them. They're having some problem with their breast cancer, and they called us to ask for help, or they wrote to me to ask for help. And we spent time trying to figure out what their problem is and who they needed to see to get some help. We get...
Well, how did you know they weren't going to buy your product?
Because they didn't have any of the indications for why they would need the product.
Sure, you know, one knows.
So, but it doesn't matter if they called us, we were going to help them.
Of course.
We're very liberal in our return policies as well. And I think the message being that these women need to be heard. I think that was something that Rachel felt very strongly as well, that you can't just dismiss their complaints or their concerns and that we take it very seriously. And that's where we spend time on the phone with customers who are unhappy in some way. And we try and at least hear what they have to say and respect what they have to say.
Do you both think about your relationship with Rachel, you know, as this remarkable story? I love this story, by the way. As this great story unfolds, do you think about what you said to her in that day in the hospital room, Howard?
Oh, yeah, frequently. There have been days when I thought about it a lot that have been very difficult days.
What do you mean difficult?
Well, that where there's problems in the office and things are going south, and you know, this happens in offices all the time. And was this really a good idea? And then... it always comes back to the same thing. It was the only way to go. I had to do that.
You know, your career has been interesting in that you were a practicing physician and then you went to work for some of the pharmaceuticals and others. Have you ever thought about getting them involved in this?
Well, we have prized our independence, and any offers to help or offers to purchase will be looked at very carefully with respect to Rachel's legacy.
That's what makes the difference. This is not just a story about a company. It's a story about a company that was started by a woman who died of passed from breast cancer and whose parents said, you know, we're gonna make this a testimonial to you. It's amazing.
There was another story about Rachel, that she again toward the end of her life where she said that the thing that she most regretted was that she couldn't take care of us when we got old. And One of the things that I think about with respect to lymphedemas is that if it is successful and someday maybe can produce some income for me and Judy, she will be taking care of us when we got old. And I think about that, too.
How many children worry about taking care of their parents?
Yeah, I know. She was, well, I'm sure there are others, but that was who she was.
Yeah. So tell me about a little bit about your son and your daughter. Did they have a close relationship when they were growing up?
Not really. I do wonder what Rachel would think if she knew that Josh was heading the company now.
Were they competitive?
They were very, very competitive.
How so?
Even though, you know, there's almost 6 years apart, so it was really like two single children. Rachel had to work very, very hard for everything. She was very smart, but she was a hard worker and determined. Josh, things came much more easily to him, and she was always very envious of that.
Was younger.
He was 6 years younger.
Yeah.
And she was a typical first child. He was a typical second child. Very much more laid back, much more easygoing. I would say she was rather intense, and which is why she was able to do the things she was able to do.
And when Josh wanted in, and you knew you had set this company up as a memorial, did this occur to you that this was in any way, you know, that you had to think that through?
No, because as they got older, they did become closer.
I see.
And really respected each other a great deal. And family was very important. Family has always been very important in our families. And this just felt like a very natural flow for Josh to take over. And for him also, I think he feels, not that I can speak for him, but he feels very connected to Rachel by doing this as well. I mean, he signs his email, his heading, it says Rachel's little brother. And so I think he it's really important to him that he maintain this connection with us and with Rachel.
Yeah. So if we look into the future of this company, you're coming up with new products, you're coming up with gloves, you're coming up with other ideas. What else would you like to see done with it?
Well, I'd like to see the company be very successful. One of the things that
Do you always worry that there'll be an intervening crisis of some kind?
Of course. I mean, I think anybody in business worries that something untoward will happen, no matter how good you are and how hard you work, because you live in the world and it is erratic and you can't anticipate everything that goes on. It's unpredictable. One of the things that I would like to see grow out of this company is a foundation in Rachel's name to help women with cancer and lymphedema. That isn't ready yet, but it's something that could occur in the future.
Although there is now, still, we do have some sleeves that are a certain portion of the sale is dedicated to some organizations that will help women get sleeves when they can't afford them. So we have a number of those sleeves.
Yeah. But I would like to see if there, and you talked about maybe it would be sold. I'm not anticipating a sale, but I'm anticipating success that would allow us to fund that kind of an institution.
And when you look back on your decision, Howard, to go to medical school, do you ever sort of think that this would have been the trajectory of your life?
No, and particularly, I mean, you have to realize that I'm kind of straight and very scientific, logical person. The furthest thing in my mind would be involved in fashion. And here I was, in this business that received a copy of Women's Wear Daily as the publications that they was important to the business. This was definitely not me, but I've picked up some of that stuff. Not.
And Judy?
Well, that's actually one part that I have liked a lot is color forecasting, pattern design, naming the patterns. We have a whole, I don't go into the office anymore at all. Howard does, but I do not. But we used to sit around a table and develop names for all the sleeves. They all have a name, and everybody has a good time doing that. And it's a lot of fun. Very creative part.
Well, I have to tell you, I love talking to both of you. I think it's just a great story. And I don't know who's going to play your parts in the movie, but but it's terrific.
Well, thank you so much for having us. I think it's been really a wonderful experience for me.
Well, we loved having you. We've been in conversation today with Judy and Howard Levin, who are here talking about Lymphadivas, a company that produces and sells medically correct fashion for lymphedema. Based in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, Judy and Howard, thanks so much for joining us today. Much luck with everything you've done and are going to do.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Dr. Alan Chartok, President and CEO of WAMC Northeast Public Radio and Professor Emeritus at the University at Albany. For more information on the In Conversation with Alan series, or to order additional copies of this or any interview in the series, call 1-800-323-9262 or visit us on the web at wamc.org.